Radio Prague News.
The Social Democrat leadership has confirmed the end of government coalition talks. The opposition party leader Petr Fiala says that someone other than Mr. Babiš should get a chance at forming a government. And the defense minister has visited Czech troops in Iraq. The leadership of the Social Democratic Party on Friday confirmed that party leader Jan Hamáček's decision to end negotiations with ANO on a minority coalition government supported by the communists. This after the talks collapsed late on Thursday over a division of government portfolios. The Social Democrat leader decided to end the talks after ANO refused to let his party head the Interior Ministry, a demand that was to help the Social Democrats come to terms with ANO's insistence on the cabinet being headed by Andrej Babiš, who is charged with EU subsidy fraud. The outgoing Prime Minister said he would request a meeting with President Miloš Zeman to discuss developments. If the country's Prime Minister in resignation, Andrej Babiš, is unable to form a viable government capable of getting a majority in the Chamber of Deputies, someone else should be given the chance, Petr Fiala, the head of the second largest party in the lower house, the Civic Democrats, has said. His words were in response to the news late Thursday that talks between Mr. Babiš's ANO and the Social Democrats on forming a minority government had collapsed. Although the Prime Minister offered the Social Democrats 5 seats in the government, ANO were unwilling to let go key ministries like finance or the interior. The Communist Party will wait for the winners of the election last November ANO to take the next step before considering possible support for an ANO-led minority government. Talks between ANO and the Social Democrats ended on Thursday, and the Communist Party leader Vojtěch Filip suggested the collapse could have been avoided, in his view, if the Communists had played the role of mediator. Any ANO and Social Democrat government would still lack a majority of seats and would have to lean on the Communist Party for support. The defense minister in resignation, Karla Šlechtová, on Thursday visited Czech troops serving in Iraq, the defense ministry reported on its webpage. The visit was kept at a low profile for security reasons. The Czech Republic currently has 3 military units in the country involved in the training of Iraqi military police, training pilots on Czech L-159 fighter jets, as well as anti-chemical instructors. A quick look at the weather. Saturday should be sunny, with daytime temperatures reaching around 17 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Velinger, and that's the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, what next after talks on forming a new Czech government collapse? Czech UNESCO listed treasures go on show here in Prague. And later, an unusual group will take part in the Prague Half Marathon this weekend, Prisoners. All that's coming up in today's program. Talks between ANO and the Social Democrats on forming a minority coalition government with support from the communists collapsed on Thursday night. The breakdown was reportedly caused by the fact that ANO refused to let the Social Democrats head the Ministry of the Interior, which they demanded as, and I quote, a guarantee of independence, given the fact that the cabinet would be headed by a prime minister charged with EU subsidy fraud. So, given the ANO leader's evident low coalition potential, is the Czech Republic facing early elections? That's a question Daniela Lazareva put to political scientist Jiří Peha.
Well, I think that the early elections seem to be the most likely scenario at this point, not because of Mr. Babiš's inability to gain majority support, because he would probably be able to do so with the help of the Communist Party and the Movement for Freedom and Direct Democracy of Mr. Okamura with concessions. But I think that Mr. Babiš really doesn't want to rely on those two parties together, especially on Okamura's party, simply because that party is viewed both in the Czech Republic and in the West as an extremist party. And Mr. Babiš in recent months has tried very hard to portray himself as a pro-Western, pro-European politician, partly, I think, because he wants to create a source of legitimacy for himself, which he likes at home, where he's criticized for being anti-democratic and authoritarian.
The president has said he is against early elections. Do you think that they will try to draw out this period as long as possible?
Yes, I think that Mr. Babiš is basically happy with the current situation. He has a minority government, which can get some laws approved with the help of parties, but different parties on through ad hoc arrangements. So I don't think that he's in any rush, and Mr. Zeman doesn't seem to be in any kind of hurry either. So I think that both of them will sort of cooperate on keeping this government in power as long as possible, and then either moving towards elections, which would require a second unsuccessful attempt, and then a third unsuccessful attempt forming the government, or a resolution by the parliament, or the lower chamber to dissolve itself. But all of those things are not likely to happen anytime soon. So I think that Mr. Babiš will continue with his current government for some time.
What if the new elections end up pretty much the same way? Then what happens? Is this a deadlocked situation? Because clearly his coalition potential is practically nil.
Yes, that's a danger for Mr. Babiš. However, it seems that at this point he's been able to weaken both leftist parties, the Social Democrats and the Communists. Social Democrats do not come out of failed negotiations about the next government with a very good profile, simply because they abandoned some of their principles or promises not to be in the government with a politician or prime minister who is criminally prosecuted. So they may lose even more voters than they have already lost. Plus the Czech political right is in this array, fractioned, and unless it is able to unite in some way, Mr. Babiš may actually be able to achieve a more spectacular victory than in the fall of 2017.
Is the Czech Republic in big trouble?
Yes, in some ways it could be, but at the same time, I think that Mr. Babiš is really not the kind of populist or power-grabbing politician that we see in Hungary or in Poland. I think that he is very much interested in keeping a pretty good picture of himself, maintaining a pretty good picture of himself, especially in the West, where he also has some business interests. And so, yes, it would not, of course, be good news for Czech democracy. Mr. Babiš rules single-handedly, but at the same time, I think that he would probably not go for the kind of steps that we see in Hungary or Poland because he seems to be, as I said, much more interested in having good relations with Brussels and the West in general.
And that was Jiří Peha speaking to my colleague Daniela Lazareva. An exhibition showcasing items and documents from Czech collections, recently placed on a UNESCO list of World Documentary Treasures, has just got underway here in Prague. Visitors can see the Great Siege of Malta map from the 16th century, the Kinžvart daguerreotype, or items from composer Leoš Janáček's archive. Ruth Frankova has more.
The Czech Republic currently boasts 8 entries on the UNESCO Memory of the World list, including the Libri Prohibiti, a collection of periodicals of Czech and Slovak samizdat from the communist era, or the collection of Czech Reformation medieval manuscripts. New items on the prestigious list are currently on display at the National Technical Museum in Prague. One of them is the Kinžvart daguerreotype, a photographic image from 1839. Hinek Střídeský from the National Technical Museum says it symbolizes the birth of the visual era.
Kinžvartská daguerreotypie je unikátní z několika důvodů. Jejím autorem je sám Daguer.
The daguerreotype is unique for several reasons. First of all, it was made by Daguer himself. Before he presented his invention to the public, he donated this daguerreotype to the Austrian Chancellor Metternich, and you can even see his written dedication to the politician. Another reason is that it belongs to one of the best preserved historical daguerreotypes in the world.
Že mezi těmi dochovanými daguerreotypy patří k těm nejzachovalejším.
Another Czech UNESCO World Heritage is the Leoš Janáček Archive, a documentary collection covering the heritage of one of the greatest Czech composers. Jiří Zahrádka, a musicologist specializing on Janáček, explains the importance of his archive.
Ten archiv je velmi rozsáhlý a kompletní. Myslím si, že není na světě.
This archive is really vast and complex. I think there is no other composer's archive which would be so complete. We have, I would say, 95% of his compositions, letters, documents and librettos. So the archive is unique, not only for us, but for the whole world.
V mezinárodním kontextu pro ten světový význam.
Among the items featuring in the archive is the only preserved manuscript of Janáček's ballet Janúfa, or letters from composer Gustav Mahler and Czechoslovakia's first president Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk. Another Czech listing on the UNESCO Memory of the World is one of the Great Siege of Malta maps by Giovanni Francesco Camocchio. Three of these maps are in the possession of Malta, while the fourth was discovered at the Charles University Map Collection in Prague. Bernardine Šikluna is a curator of the National Museum of Fine Arts in Valletta.
Today, these Great Siege maps, and fortunately with the collaboration with the Charles University, and thanks to the discovery by Joseph Skuro of the second stage, we have a complete series which represents the final phases of the Great Siege that ensued between May and September 1565. And today they are part of our collective memory, they are part of our cultural heritage. They are of importance, they are of special, if not emotional, significance to us Maltese because they represent a turning point in our history. Back in the 16th century, conquering Malta meant having the conquest of the Mediterranean. Once the Mediterranean is in your hands, then you have access to Europe.
The exhibition at Prague's National Technical Museum is running until the 11th of April.
Now, one of the biggest sporting events of the year in Prague, the city's half marathon, takes place this coming weekend. And there'll be a very unusual group of runners taking part, as Jan Vellinger has been finding out.
More than 70 athletes, including 9 prisoners and 1 ex-offender, are set to run in the Yellow Ribbon Half Marathon in Prague at the weekend. The first of 4 races, the event highlights the importance of supporting the reintegration of former offenders within broader society upon completing their sentence. The charity race takes place on Saturday as part of the broader Sportissimo Half Marathon. I spoke to Christina Laboha, she is the spokesperson for the Yellow Ribbon Prison Run, about the need for prejudices to be overcome, and about this event's origins.
It began as a Yellow Ribbon project in Singapore, I think in 2004. And actually, it is not limited only to running, but in Singapore, it includes, let's say, exhibiting prisoners' pictures, and it includes organizing concerts, arts competition, everything in support of reintegrating ex-prisoners back into society. The whole thing in Singapore and now in Prague to advocate the second chance for ex-offenders and their families. I myself visited Singapore last year, and it's really a fascinating event. The whole ribbon, Yellow Ribbon project is organized by a state organization called CARE, which is an abbreviation for Community Action for Rehabilitation of Ex-Offenders. And it's already, how many, it's 13 or 14 years that the Yellow Ribbon project has taken place. Mm-hmm. It inspired some other Asian countries, like Hong Kong, I think, but still the biggest event is held in Singapore.
At what point did it sort of come under consideration that it could take place here?
Okay, so actually it was our partner from the prison service, from the Czech prison service, Gabina Slováková, she's the governor of the biggest women's prison in the country in Svetlana Cázavo, and she went to Singapore, I think, in 2011 for an international conference, and it took place at the time when also the Yellow Ribbon Run took place, and actually Gabina, as she told us later, she immediately fell in love with the event because she saw a huge interest of Singaporeans in the event. It is a very big day there. Thousands of people really participate in the run. So she decided it would be a good thing to bring over to the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. But of course, it took some time to go through with the organization.
It seems that the spirit of the event is largely, well, as you said, it's about the rehabilitation of prisoners, which uh-huh. can be very difficult. Obviously, it can play a very important role, can't it, in terms of prisoners getting back on track and, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. returning to a new life?
For sure, it wasn't really easy from the beginning, because given the climate in our country, the Czechs are not very keen of, let's say, some rehabilitative programs for ex-prisoners. They usually wish a stricter penal policy, and we really fight with prejudices that the state should help children or older people, but not really the prisoners. But we have to say it is becoming better and better. Maybe it also has to do with low unemployment, that the big employers, big companies are really in search for new employees, and this yellow ribbon run also helps them to sort of get rid of the prejudices that, that they can see that perhaps their partners, some other businesses, they have already employed people with criminal past, and that these people can be good, loyal employees. I think it is so important to realize for many Czechs that every year there are about 10,000 or 11,000 people getting out of the prisons, and these people will become their new neighbors or they will be their co-workers, and you really have to give them a hand to help them reintegrate back into the society, because it is not just up to the state to do this. The state can't do everything. If the the prisoners in Singapore, I think they use the terminology that they sometimes go into a second prison after the real imprisonment. They have problems with living a normal life because they fight with prejudices. And this is also, I think that the Singaporean society has gone really a long way since, let's say, 2000 or 2004, when the Yellow Ribbon Run started. That, as I saw it on my own eyes, I think they understand more and more that you sort of have to help your new neighbors, which could be the offenders in the past, because otherwise they can, if they don't have a decent job, they don't make normal money, they don't have their family or friends support in the community, it is very likely they will commit a crime again and they might go back to the prison. I think it was last month that there was a new press release or a new report from the Council of Europe that Turkey and Czech Republic have got the highest prison population in Europe. And the solution, you can't really put everyone behind bars.
Right. Somebody committed a crime, but the sentence is the payment. You know, that is the payment. And once you've paid that debt to society, you should be able to return to society as a full-fledged member and not be continually punished for something that you paid the price for. That's why you went
to
jail.
That's true. That's what we always focus on, this message that these people have already completed their sentence. So after the release, they should be dealt with like everyone else.
And this year, if I'm not mistaken, will be the third year. Is that correct?
It is correct. It is already the third year. So they started, if I count well, in 2016. In the beginning, it was prison service and with some help of the nonprofit organization Rubicon Center. Later, they got also the probation and mediation service on board and some other partners. And they started with, I think, 30 runners altogether. And this year, we will have about 600 runners altogether in four races.
And there's a half marathon which is coming up this very weekend on Saturday.
For the Yellow Ribbon, there is, I think, about 70 racers, and about 9 of them are prisoners. In Prague, you have got like 4 different dates, and you run 4 different races. They take place, let's say, from April up until June. But the most important difference as for the races or as for the organization of the races, that in Prague, there are prisoners who run the races. In Singapore, you don't have the prisoners. They stay in the prison. So it is a thing that really fascinates even Singaporeans who every year they come over and they participate in Prague runs, that you really every year you get about, let's say, 10 prisoners who are in the middle of serving their sentence, and they can run in marathon, let's say.
There's all kinds of aspects there, because one thing is training alone, because that's not an easy race to run. Anybody who's ever done a half marathon knows it's not, you have to prepare. So I wanted to ask you about how the prisoners prepare if they're, for example, from low security facilities where they have more chance to train. And I also wanted to ask you about the prisoners themselves, what they were serving time for and other factors that sort of played a role in them being able to take part.
Many people think that it's usually prisoners who have got who are serving time for lesser crimes, but it's not necessarily. Actually, this year we have got some male prisoners running who are sentenced for murder and serious bodily harm. But I would say that usually they are nearing the end of their sentence. But it's usually the competence of the prison service itself to decide which prisoner can take part. But I myself work for the probation and mediation service, which means that we deal like with the alternative sentencing. But if you ask to people in the prison system, there is an evaluation at the start of an individual like sentence, and there are checks during serving the sentence, and of course they have to be sure that if these people get outside of the prison, that they're safe. As I understand it, it's basically what is most important is their motivation, and I think health good enough for taking part in these long runs.
How do they train?
Yeah, that's really amazing because we already have prisoners from the last year who completed the marathon race, and everybody is asking how do they train. They actually train short distances in the prison courtyard, except for one or two occasions when we had those like official trainings and when they could get out, but still it wasn't a whole like 40 kilometers distance. It was like perhaps 10 kilometers. In the prison, they train in the courtyard, and when they got, let's say, for those like official press conferences, when they got out of the bars, so they there were like guards running with them. It is also how the races themselves take place, that they've got like one or two guards running with them. So it is actually exercise for both guards and prisoners.
So there will be guards, for example, this weekend. That's how the security is covered.
And you won't recognize the guards. You won't recognize who is a prisoner and who is a guard. It's actually one of the fascinating things that you can't really tell the bosses from the prisoners and from the guards.
The promotional material went to some length, of course, to describe the different walks of life that people are from, whether they be business people or ex-convicts or anybody really. So I guess the big message is one of inclusion and acceptance. That's what matters.
The message is here. If you look at the photos from the runs, you really can't tell who is the boss of a big company and who is a prisoner. The race is about inclusion and acceptance. For them, it is really a great motivation. You are a part of a like bigger project. You have a chance to, let's say, get out of the prison at certain occasions, and you also have a goal, I think. For many of them, and we have their stories put together, they like overcoming some hurdles in the run and doing long distances is really like, you know, keeping a promise for themselves and their families that they can do it, that their families can trust them again. So it's really the spirit of running is broader than just, it is not just about sports.
That was Christina Laboja from the Yellow Ribbon Prison Run. Now, in the very last part of our program today, we're joined by Chris Johnstone with the latest song in our series, Hit of the Century.
Hit of the Century.
And today we're stopping off in 1982. Now, Slovak singers were very popular in Czechoslovakia in the 80s. Some examples were Marika Gombitová, Miroslav Zbirka and Petr Nag, and the band Elan, which won awards based on popularity polls. There was something unprecedented about them and their hit song, which struck the domestic music scene with the force of a lightning bolt. On April 14th, 1982, a song written by Carol Wagner and Pavel Shark was recorded called The Girls from Our Kindergarten. It was sung by Stanislav Slozek and Petr Kotwald, who until then was only known for as a backup singers and dancers alongside the star of Czech pop music, Hanna Zagorová. The media went mad for this song, containing a long list of girls' names and descriptions of love spanning from kindergarten to university. Back then, every child knew the song, whether they loved it or hated it. Many families bought second and even third copies of the record when their first copies became worn out on the questionable Czech gramophones. The recording has since been released on many different mediums, and to this day it remains one of the best-selling songs in Czechoslovak history.
That's all for now from Radio Prague. From me, Ian Willoughby, thank you very much indeed for listening, and goodbye.